what's the research telling us about this condition? Where's that the field going?
So a lot is known about the initial events that cause ARDS, like an influx of neutrophils. Much less is known is how the lung resolves injury. And that's some of the stuff that we do in the lab. But back to the patients, we know that primarily over the last decade and a half, that the things that help patients recover and decrease mortality are things like the ventilator and lowering those breaths we give patients to cause less injury from the ventilator.
So wait a minute. There are several issues we need to talk about. One is the last one you just said. When one is intubated and on an artificial breathing machine, otherwise known as a ventilator, that process in and by itself causes lung injury.
Yes, it can.
Always or sometimes?
Sometimes.
And what are the conditions in which a ventilator can actually induce more damage than providing good?
It's an important question. So normally when we breathe naturally, our diaphragms contract. There's a negative pressure and air is pulled into the lungs. The ventilator does the exact opposite. So we have a patient on the ventilator with a tube down their throat and we are forcing air in. And so we know from animal models that over-distention or full collapse of the lung is injurious. And so we want to kind of have this middle ground of keeping the lung open, but also not over-distending it. And so it's important with how we ventilate patients on life support, the mechanical ventilator, so as not to cause either too small of a breath or too large of a breath that could be injurious. And that's called ventilator-induced lung injury.
If ventilators are both helpful and injurious, what can you do to make sure that you as an ICU physician limit the possible damage to the patient's lung?
There are several things that we can do. Treatment is primarily supportive, but the most beneficial and significant advance has been those small breaths over time from the ventilator. That initial study came out in 2000, and it was done by either giving patients kind of the standard breath at the time or half the amount of breath, half the volume. And what was found is that those patients that received half the volume, low tidal volume ventilation, actually had about a 9% decrease in mortality, a huge decrease. The average mortality of ARDS now is ranged between 20 and 50%.
Wow. So if you give a person a diagnosis of ARDS, there's really a mortality risk associated that pretty large.
Absolutely. When you look at epidemiological cohort studies, it's estimated that in the United States, there's probably about 190,000 cases a year of ARDS, with about 75,000 deaths. And that's estimated to increase by 2030 to over 330,000 cases and 150,000 deaths. And that's due to an aging population.
Everything is more difficult as we age. So there are things then that you can do just with the ventilator by itself to decrease the mortality rate.
Absolutely. It's those low tidal volumes. And so every patient on a ventilator, we measure that based on their ideal body weight.
So if you're a family member or a patient with ARDS, what are the risk factors that are associated with this mortality rate? What tells you if you're going to be in the group that's going to survive or not survive?
Age is probably the primary driver. If an 18-year-old comes down with viral influenza pneumonia, their mortality is less than 20%. If you're an 85-year-old person with the exact same process, your mortality is up above 50%. So age is primarily one. The other is the actual etiology for this
syndrome.
Can't do
much about age.
You can't do much about age. It's the actual etiology, too, and so how we treat and care for it. And so if you have sepsis or an exuberant inflammatory response, that has a higher mortality than if you had inhalational lung injury or a drug reaction or a transfusion reaction. So that's the second. And the third is the other chronic conditions a patient may have. If they're immunocompromised, such as HIV or AIDS, or a transplant patient, their mortality is higher. If they have chronic kidney injury, or if they smoke, or chronic alcohol abuse. Those are all risk factors that we see for certain etiologies increase your risk and increase your mortality for ARDS.
So some of those prognostic factors one has no control of. It seems like the factors that one may have control of have to do with treatment options. So what are the treatment options then that would improve the outcome for patients with ARDS?
So besides the ventilator, there are several non-ventilator therapies that very recently have been shown to improve mortality. One is neuromuscular blockers or paralytics. And so when we talk about putting a patient on a ventilator, we want them to be in sync with the ventilator. Because if they're not in sync, that potentially causes more ventilator injury.
You don't want the person to fight the ventilator.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And so the best way to do that is by giving them a little bit of sedation and making them comfortable. But when their injury is severe and they are fighting the ventilator, one of the therapies that's been shown to improve mortality is actually to paralyze the patient, keep them heavily sedated, and give them a paralytic.
Yeah, so that's always a terrifying thought. There you have somebody who's on a ventilator, and now you're paralyzing them. And as a loved one, you want to make sure that the person doesn't feel any of that.
Absolutely. And so when I care for a patient in the ICU and we have to reach for paralysis, I talk to the family extensively and say that they won't remember this, that they are heavily sedated when they're paralyzed to help the ventilator work and allow time for their lungs to recover from the injury.
Because the last thing anybody wants is a paralyzed human on a ventilator who's wide awake.
Absolutely.
That would be terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. Sedation is incredibly important.
Yes.
Yeah. What else can you do to alter the treatment?
One of the things that we find actually is that we can place patients on their stomach, or what we call the prone position. And that's also for severe injury. And that homogenizes the ventilation that we give a patient. So just putting them on their stomach causes less injury to the lung. And that's been shown recently to also improve mortality.
So there have to be new ICU beds that have a place for the person to be able to lie on their stomach with a tube. There have to be holes in the bed.
There are actually specialty beds, but actually, it's not a process that is done with a lot of extra effort. It takes three or four nurses and a staff willing to patient on their stomach. And in this study, there weren't any increase in adverse events. The tube coming out, extra bleeding, pressure ulcers. And so there isn't a lot of risk to actually just move a patient on their stomach for up to 16 hours a day. And we know and we've seen that that improves oxygenation and does have a mortality benefit. 20 days out, patients that are prone early, on their stomach early, have an 18% mortality versus about a 38% mortality.
Huh. What about the role of physical therapy?
It's huge. And even more so now, we're finding that from a basic science standpoint, exercise actually probably is anti-inflammatory. And patients that have active physical therapy in an ICU, even on a ventilator, helps those long-term outcomes. On average, a patient who survives ARDS, about 77% return to work at 1 year. Physical therapy early on helps fight against the long-term morbidities of muscle weakness, neurocognitive abnormalities such as memory, depression.
When one's in an ICU, a patient's in an ICU, whether they're on a ventilator or they're not on a ventilator, most of the time patients don't really recall that much about the episode in any case. Does physical therapy help with that post-ICU phenomenon?
It does. It helps against what you're describing as post-ICU delirium. And so even 2 decades ago, patients, to promote in sync with the ventilator, they were heavily sedated. We're finding that patients that are in sync with the ventilator, not fighting it, the less sedation we give them, the more physical therapy we give them, the the less ICU delirium they have.
So it's a balance between paralysis, sedation, and being able to do physical therapy.
Correct. We only reach for paralysis in severe cases, the small fraction. The majority of patients on a ventilator, the goal is now to keep them awake and have them work with physical therapy, actually walk down the hall on the ventilator if possible.
So if you're sitting in the ICU and you're caring for somebody, what questions do you want the family to ask you?
The families often ask first, how likely are the patients to survive this? And that's a difficult question to answer oftentimes, and I don't like giving percentages. But knowing the etiology and knowing the patient, and it becomes very patient-specific. It's the sort of patient that has a disease process and not a disease that a patient has is helpful. The other things that patients, families often want to know is what to expect if they get better. And telling them that they're in for potentially a long rehabilitation stay, along with some of these other consequences, memory loss, post-ICU delirium, even post-traumatic stress disorder from the ICU. Those are the sort of things that patients' families ask us, and I often talk about as they improve through their stay, what to expect after they leave the ICU.
On the other side of the coin, how do you tell a family member or another physician, let's say, how to avoid ARDS?
There's a lot of studies now in how do we prevent this from even happening in the first place. So patients that are on a ventilator that have no injury, we know that those low tidal volumes, those small volumes, help prevent ARDS or lung injury from first occurring. We know that less sedation is usually helpful. We know that sitting a patient up in bed to keep from aspirating and causing more damage to their lungs is also helpful.
And if somebody hasn't been ventilated yet and you're worried about them developing ARDS, what can be done in those hours before the thought of ventilation happens?
Using other modalities that don't place a patient on a ventilator, things like non-invasive ventilation, high flow, that give a lot of oxygen, but to an awake patient that helps support their need for that oxygen without having to then place them on a ventilator.
Probably give them plenty of oxygen and maybe even, if possible, get them up.
Correct.
Get them out of bed. Jason, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.